This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Subscribe to the podcast Beyond Politics. They host some of the biggest names and smartest minds. Beyond Politics is from a former Democratic congressman who helped ignite Barack Obama's campaign and a former campaign manager and political columnist. They go beyond the usual chatter on politics, news, science, and books. It's politics and everything beyond. On Beyond Politics, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Broadcasting live on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, and in the evenings on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday, Super Tuesday, and that's because of me. Good to have you with us today. Matt Patrick here, Patrick Cooligan from the Minnesota Reformer, joining us in the 4 o'clock hour to talk some of the stories they've been covering. Patrick, how are we today?
Doing well. Did you get out to your polling place today?
What do you think this little sucker is here, huh? Yeah.
I didn't even see that yet on you.
Well, let me get my camera down here so I can show off my sticker of joy. There it is. There it is. Look at that. Look at that. Cool. Not a lot of people. I'm going to be honest with you. My ballot was just the Democratic presidential numbers. I went out and, yep, but, you know, I'm going to say this. I say this every time we have an election. I'll say this again. I was there when the Berlin Wall came down and East Germany, Germans flooded into the old West Germany because they were terrified that wall was going to go back up and quick. And they would drive across the border. They would get out of their Trabis, these little garbage European cars, which are now collector's items. And they're, I could have had 100 of the damn things. They left them running. They would literally leave them running on the side of the road, and U.S. military people were out there helping to clear these vehicles. I could have had 100 of them. Easy. They basically dumped their Trabis, got out, walked into West Germany and said, I now can choose who represents us. And that was one of those pivotal moments in my life where I said, oh yeah, voting actually is kind of important, isn't it? It is. I know. You think we would learn in 2020 or 2016 or 2000 and, you know, but, okay, fine. Better late than never for everyone else. Go team, go, huh? So I encourage you to go vote. I mean, they're voting in a lot of states today. I mean, it is a super duper duper Tuesday and America Samoa. Cause I said, they were showing the images of all the states that were voting, and there was one who was like, I don't recognize that one. Is there a 51st state I didn't know about? Nope, that's America Samoa. Which, is that over? I mean, isn't that on the other side of the international dateline in the Pacific?
I thought that was the one that they just re-angled the international dateline a couple years ago.
So that's now the last time zone that goes across.
That might be. I'd have to check. I can't remember which way they redrew it.
Let's see here. Here you go. It's Alabama, Colorado, California, North Carolina, Utah, Vermont. America Samoa, Minnesota is in there. Let's see here. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in Minnesota with Dean Phillips. I'll get to that here in a little bit. Utah, Vermont, as goes Utah. Go the Mormons, I guess. it is true. I mean, there's a lot there. Beautiful state. Underrated state. I would make this argument. Utah, underrated state. Very underrated state. Definitely worth a trip. So we'll go through this here. I'll talk about what's up for stakes once again today. But I guess I want to take the first few minutes here of the show. I want to talk about, of all things, my daughter. She, I said, I'm heading over to vote in the primaries. I went out. I got a nice little haircut. Looking good. Hello there. Hi.
and grabbed some breakfast out this morning. Oh, delicious. Came back home. I went out with my son because he's back from spring break. My son and my daughter are back from college for spring break. And so I got a chance to spend some time with them. So I had breakfast and got my haircut. And my son came with me and he got his haircut. We went back home. I'm going to go over to the primary. And my daughter says, oh, I'm going to go with you too. And I said, well, you know, can you? Because, you know, I thought she had registered to vote up at UMD up in Duluth, Minnesota. And she said, well, you can do same day registration. And, you know, so she basically was able to go in there. She explained their situation. They said, sure, we can get you registered. And so they registered her to vote and she voted. And what she voted was, no comment, basically. She, uncommitted was the vote. And I looked at that list. And I saw Moonbeam. I saw Dean Phillips. I saw a bunch of other people like, no. And I saw Joe Biden. I voted for Joe Biden. Because once again, it's... We are very, I want to make sure I say this in regards to the people who are upset about what's happened in the Middle East and stuff. I am not happy with it either. But I'm also not foolish enough to think that trying to do damage to the one person who can stop Donald Trump at this point is a good idea. I don't think that that's a good idea. I just do not, try. What we're going to do is we're going to tell everybody not to vote for him up until June, and then we're going to tell everybody they have to vote for him. Yeah, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. And I talked about this before in regards to the, what happened in 2000, what happened in 2016. In 2000 with the Ralph Nader voters, in 2016 with the upset Bernie voters, how when W won in 2000, the Nader fans were like, better listen to us now. And then all of a sudden 9/11 happens. Like, well, we didn't know that was going to happen. Yeah. Tell that to the dead soldiers that died in Iraq, thanks to W and Cheney. On the other side of it, you had in 2016, you had Bernie fans, and they were, oh, trust me, bet you wish you were happy with this now. And then all of a sudden, babies in cages and three Supreme Court justices. Why do you guys keep bringing that up? Because you did it. Because you thought you were being clever. And you thought, I don't know what you thought. If you want to know the truth, I don't know what you thought, because right now, one of two people is going to be the president of the United States in November when they're going to win the presidency. It's either Donald Trump or Joe Biden. Unless something truly tragic does happen to either one of them, that is the vote right now. Biden v. Trump. And the way that a lot of people want to dance around the obvious that Donald Trump would be an absolute disaster for this country if he was reelected. Because I don't think we would ever see another election in this country again. Clearly not a fair one. Let's say he makes, Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, makes her the vice president. You think that even if there is absolutely, it's an absolute destruction in 2028 and the Democrats win overwhelming, you think she's going to sit there and say, well, I think that there's questions here, so I'm not going to sign off on this, on the Electoral College, and we're going to send it to the House where we have a one state majority and we're going to install Donald Trump for a third term or Don Jr.? Of course they're going to. And I have said this before, is that you can't walk this back. You start throwing out legitimate elections, you can't really walk that back. And so here we are. Now, I'm not going to ever tell anyone how to vote. That is up to you. Whether you would do even vote. It is a primary. It's not, this is not exactly going to be the bellwether. I would be stunned if Joe Biden didn't win this in the state by at least 40 points in regards to the state of Minnesota. I think in most other states, he's going to trounce. There's not going to be really any competition whatsoever. But at the end of the day, he's still going to be the nominee. And so you have to make a decision on what is the smart thing to do. Now, once again, I do have a little bit of a megaphone here, and I do very vocally have said I am not happy with what Joe Biden has done with Israel. And once again, Israel obviously has the right to defend themselves. After what happened in October, I had no problem until it became pretty clear that there was another agenda going on here. And they were using the attack to not only get retribution against the Palestinians, but basically take over the entire Gaza Strip. And my guess is within 10 years, they'll have settlements throughout the whole thing, and the Palestinians will be, I don't know where the Palestinians will be. I can tell you one thing, which is complicated for the Israelis, is they don't want to let the Palestinians out of the Gaza Strip or out of their control. They don't want to do that, but yet they don't want the Palestinians to have any land or anything outside of what is at the end of all this is going to probably be some sort of internment camp, a la what happened to the Japanese during World War II in the United States. Only in much worse conditions. I don't know. But clearly, we should not be supporting them as blindly as we are. We should, you know, I think that there should be some immediate discussions about, you know, the funding that we have on the table. And the reality is that, you know, you cannot just look at a massive humanitarian crisis and act like that's no big deal. Now, that's what I've said, all right? And overall, as much as that Biden has not given us the most there, he still is being somewhat vocal. And apparently there have been some words exchanged between Netanyahu and Biden in regards to the Palestinians and stuff. Because once again, I think that they're looking at the Gaza Strip now as settlements and that they'll just basically put them in a barbed wire cage pen. And yeah, that's what it looks like they're going to do. You tell me what I'm missing here. But at the same time, it's not exactly like Joe Biden has been, yep, this is great. You know who has said, yep, that's great? Donald Trump. Donald Trump has said it's great. And many Republicans have actually said we should line up every Palestinian and put a bullet in their head. Now, it would seem to me, as much as you want to say, they're basically the same. No, they're not. No, they're not. I know you desperately want to be viewing yourself as the hero here. And fine, you have the right to vote whenever way you want to. But do you really want to sit there yourself and realize in July, well, we've just poisoned the water hole and the horses are starting to die of thirst? Now we have to get Joe Biden elected, because I don't want you to be like we've seen in 2000 and 2016, where all of a sudden a lot of real cock in the walk Democrats are basically out there saying, well, I didn't want that to happen. Well, you got one choice here that's sane, one choice that's insane. But, you know, you're more than welcome to do your protest thing. I'd rather not dance with the devil. I've seen what's happened to this country after 4 years with the devil the last time, and I don't want that jackass to lead. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Super Tuesday, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. You know, it's running the country from Vermont over to Alaska and American Samoa, so you have a lot of people who are involved with voting today, so head on out. Once again, let's run through a little bit what's on the stake today. It's not going to be, as far as the presidential race, I mean, the question really becomes down to is, do we continue to see the 30 to 40% of the Republican Party who is openly rejecting Donald Trump, which once again is something the Republican Party is clearly trying to ignore. And the media, national media, is trying to ignore the fact that, you know, when, you know, they tried last weekend with the Michigan vote to go on out there and make the argument and go, oh, look at this. Joe Biden lost, 13% of the vote to uncommitted. Oh, he's in big trouble. Yeah, but he lost 30-some percent to to Nikki Haley and non-committed on the other side. Well, that's just, you know, that's still a dominant performance by Trump, is it? Okay, so, because I don't think it is. Especially for a guy who, once again, is the closest thing you can get to being an incumbent without being an incumbent. A guy who's won the office before and he's running again. And he basically has the vast majority of the Republican machine on his side at this point. 15 states plus one U.S. territory will hand out delegates to each major party's nominations. But most of the more interesting races are further down the ballot. Biden and Trump will continue their steady marches toward their party nominations today. And should be a reminder, I mentioned America Samoa. Michael Bloomberg managed to win during the former New York mayor's doomed 2020 quest for the Democratic presidential nomination. He won that in America Samoa out there, but as goes America Samoa, does basically no one else. Biden faces only nominal opposition from Representative Dean Phillips, whose home state of Minnesota votes today. Do you see any Dean Mentum? I don't see any Dean Mentum. Not in this state. No candidate is going to trounce Dean Phillips, I think, as far as a protest goes, vote goes. That would be my guess. Trump, meanwhile, still faces a challenger from Nikki Haley. Trump has amassed 244 delegates, 43 for Haley, nearly half of which she won in D.C., which was a winner-take-all primary. But though Trump is expected to collect roughly 1,200 delegates, he needs to clinch the Republican nomination before the end of the month. Haley might do unexpectedly well in states like Vermont and Utah that have either open primaries where Democrats can vote or more moderate GOP bases that reject Trump. Let's face it, that's what happened in Washington, D.C. was Nikki Haley, you know, resonated because they're more moderate, they're more traditionally moderate Republicans there. Haley might need only a few victories to prolong Trump's pursuit of the nomination. Precious days and weeks putting him in the Republican National Committee further behind Biden and the Democratic National Committee in fundraising. I'm going to say this. If Nikki Haley actually wins a state today, you will see a scorched earth policy from Trump. Where basically, because he doesn't, the guy has, he is not a dimmer switch. He's either on or he's off. Ask a ketchup bottle. I could honestly see him not understanding that he desperately needs Nikki Haley's supporters to back him up in November. If half of Nikki Haley's supporters do not vote, this will be an overwhelming trouncing by the Democrats over the Republican. And if Nikki Haley wins any state, I think you're going to see my guess is going to be is you're going to see a pretty cush White House job. Well, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know if Nikki Haley would want it. I don't think she wants to be working for Trump anymore. I think she's mainly doing this to set herself up as the 2028 nominee, and she's doing a pretty good job of it. But at the same time, yeah, I she's already said that she's no longer going to hold herself to supporting the Republican nominee who, no matter who they are. Reminder that is something that many of these other Republican candidates who have withdrawn from the race, whether that in 2016, or now, basically, I'm going here to endorse Donald Trump. No, I don't think she will. Critical House Senate races, gubernatorial primaries include the massive interparty brawl between Texas Republicans, a fight to determine whether progressives have a shot at succeeding the late Senator Dianne Feinstein in California, indications of how far Israel's war in the Gaza is playing in the Democratic primaries, and the race in which Trump bucked conspiracy theorists is favored to win the GOP nomination for governor. Let's start there. So I'm going to read this next sentence to you. And I am going to tell you this is all factually true. And this is where the Republican Party is today. Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, a conspiracy theorist who has claimed that Beyonce is satanic, the 1969 moon landing may have been fake, and there is a ruling class of secretive reptiles, is on track to win the Republican nomination for governor in North Carolina. Reptiles. Lizards. Yes, lizard people. I loved V. Did you ever see the miniseries V from the 1980s? Oh, quality. Just quality. He apparently thought that was a documentary. It was a miniseries, sir. And yeah. Secretive reptiles. As opposed to the, you know, reptiles like, we're here to party! Woo! You know? Those reptiles, they're not the ones running everything. It's the secretive reptiles. Yeah, okay. Robinson, who's been endorsed by Trump, is poised to take on Democratic Attorney General Josh Stein. The current governor, or Democrat Roy Cooper, is a term limited out. Even when compared to recent extreme GOP nominations, Robinson's record of sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia is particularly ugly. He's mocked kids who survived school shootings as immature media prostitutes. Not joking. And advocating gun safety and for advocating gun safety reforms, he's claimed that homosexuality leads to a pedophilia. He's referred to former First Lady Michelle Obama as a man. Despite all that, Robinson has risen politically for one reason. He fashioned himself in the mold of Trump. They've endorsed each other. And last week, Trump attended a rally with Robinson and declared that he's the Martin Luther King on steroids. Sweet Jesus. Wow. Of course, Robinson had insulted King in the past, too. He said the civil rights leader was a errats pastor and that a communist, and that the 1960s civil rights movement was crap. North Carolina will have the biggest and most expensive governor's race nationwide. It is a crucial swing state in the presidential election, and of the 11 gubernatorial elections this year, just two were in swing states. North Carolina, New Hampshire. Beyond that, Robinson wins in New Hampshire in November. The GOP will have total control of the state government. At least one local political analyst previously speculated that Robinson's extremism will backfire him on the November election. You would think so. Lizard people calling people, you know, children who survived a mass shooting prostitutes, saying that. Criticizing Martin Luther King, you would think that those things would cost him. But in this modern Republican Party, he's mainstream. Worship the lizard people. We're back after a break. Money, money. Broadcasting in the evening on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk, and in the afternoons on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota in Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I'm just still basking in the insanity that is the Republican nominee for governor in North Carolina. In California, now, I think we all can, as progressives, if you're Democrat, you're progressives, you all wish you had a primary battle like this one. This is just, yeah, this is kind of one of those that is stunning how good the three-way race is in California. Representative Barbara Lee, you have Adam Schiff, the centrist Democratic Adam Schiff, and of course, Katie Porter, the progressive there. I mean, the most conservative member of this three-person race is Adam Schiff, and he's not exactly a moderate Democrat. Dare you dream. Ugh. He's almost certain to nab the leading spot in California's top two primary contest in the open seat previously held by Senator Feinstein, but all eyes are on the progressive Katie Porter and her bid to secure a second place over Republican candidate in the race, former baseball player Steve Garvey. Porter, who rose to prominence in Congress, because this is how it works in California. It's a little weird, to say the least. Porter, who rose to prominence in Congress for grilling fossil fuel industry and Wall Street CEOs, has faced a multi-million dollar barrage of television advertisement funded by wealthy donors who are seeking to deny her a spot in the runoff. Separately, Schiff's campaign has spent heavily to elevate Garvey in conservative media in hopes that boosting his appeal and ensuring that Schiff faces an easily beatable Republican candidate in California, a Democratic stronghold instead of Porter. I would say this. That's not exactly the safest strategy. You know, you're going out there and promoting a candidate in conservative media, because you yourself then are giving them validity. That blows up in your face more often than it doesn't. It really, that's not a smart play. Polls have found Porter struggling to keep even with Garvey for second place in the race, even though the campaign has barely spent any money of its own on advertising. Meanwhile, Barbara Lee, and other major progressive candidate on the race, trails third place, splitting the left in yet another advantage for Schiff's establishment-backed campaign. So, and once again, Schiff is not exactly a moderate. I mean, it's not Dean Phillips, for God's sakes. He is a pretty strong, I mean, pretty strong Democrat. I mean, very Al Gore Democrat. How about I say, like, it's kind of, if you look at someone like Barack Obama, who is more of a moderate, you had Al Gore, who was kind of a centrist. You guys have a guy like Paul Wellstone, who was on the progressive side, Bernie Sanders on the progressive side. Yeah, no, I mean, seriously, Schiff is in the middle. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I would like to see Schiff and Porter face off, because at least then you know, guarantee that one of the two of them is going to win, and frankly, the California will be better for it. That's for sure. I mean, when mom and dad fight, I'm not taking sides here. Katie Porter, oh, I love her. She's fantastic. I love Adam Schiff. I do. And I like Barbara Lee, too. They're all fantastic. We only wish we had something like that in most states. The fight to take for the right to take on Ted Cruz, that's going on today and down in Texas. U.S. Representative Colin Allred is facing off against Texas State Senator Roland Gutierrez for the Democratic nomination to run against one of the most polarizing Republicans in Congress, Ted Cruz. Cruz came close to losing his Democratic challenger Beto O'Rourke in 2018 and remains unpopular in Texas. Allred is a mild-mannered former NFL player who's boasted and fundraised a polling advantage since announcing his candidacy last year. In Texas, you played football, that, you know, in the South, that's qualifications. You know, he's running defense. He knows the ins and outs of healthcare policy. Yeah, seriously, the South doesn't. I'm glad we fought the Civil War and we beat the Confederacy back. But at the same time, there are times I look and it's like, you know, could we have let them go? You know what I mean? No, we couldn't have. We had to stop the scourge of slavery, that's for sure. Gutierrez's district includes Uvalde, site of the horrific elementary school massacre in May of 2022. He's pushed for stricter gun control and a state legislator and an unapologetic progressive. So there's where you go. During the debate in January, Allred defended his moderate voting record, including a support of the symbolic resolution condemning Joe Biden's handling of immigration on the U.S.-Mexican border. I built bro coalitions in my campaign. That's how you win tough races. Well, no, that's how you pander to a red state, is basically saying I'm really a Republican. There are seven other candidates in the race, and the winner needs 50%. So the biggest question may be whether Allred can win outright or wind up in a runoff against Gutierrez, who should do well among the state's large Latino population. There is also a war going on down in Texas right now within the Republican Party. Greg Abbott is trying to oust people who voted against his creation of a private school voucher program. Now, I want to make sure we step back here and just for voucher programs. This is a way to rip off the taxpayer. This is a way Republicans, when they just can't help themselves. They like to give tax breaks to wealthy people. They roll wheelbarrows full of cash up to millionaire and billionaires' homes, dump it in their front door, and they say, "We'll see you next month." And that's what they do this because it's twofold. One, it gets them campaign donations, and two, it gets them that lobbying gig when they're done with their political stint. And trust me, many of these Republicans that are for this give the wealthy every dime at the expense of everyone else policies, their wife is a board member of a company, their children have senior executive positions that they're nowhere near qualified for, he himself is on an advisory board, that sort of thing. They're already getting tons of cash, payback one way or the other. So that's what's going on. Republicans, after Reagan, realized that they really couldn't just open up the coffers anymore and just give the wealthy people money because you were going to have to pay for it. Now, don't get me wrong. as much as they complain about the deficit, they're the ones that created it. And the Trump era tax cuts absolutely put a hole in our budget. If you want to fix that, don't kill Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security. Just undo the Trump era tax cuts. You undo those, guess what happens? You know, you kind of sew back up that hole. But heaven forbid we actually have a common sense approach to these things. One of the things the Republicans started looking at is these balls of money that the government had, which were, some of them were sacred cows per se, in regards to the money, you know, was specifically set aside for things. One of the first ones that they went after was NASA. And NASA used to have a much larger budget and used to do a lot of good things. And granted, it's been picked apart, and they basically have barely a budget at all. And most of the money they have goes to wealthy corporations under the guise of NASA dollars. And so it really is one of those things where they went out there and they took all the money that we used to put into our space program, which gave us a lot of benefit, and it's gone. It's clear the Republicans built up the postal pension fund under the argument that they were going to try to get their hands on it and give it to the wealthy people. It was twofold there. When W did that, he made that you had to pay for 75 years of pensions in advance, which no other government agency has done or has had to do since then. This was only for the post office. One was to get the post office, and it kind of hurt the post office because they were taking money from, you know, the, you know, UPS and FedEx and these other delivery services. But other side of it was they created this massive ball of cash, which now they're desperately trying to figure out how they can crowbar that away from the postal service and give that to wealthy people as a thank you for being wealthy thing. Another big ball of cash was public schools. And this was also under W, the idea that basically you start saying that public schools are failing, so we're going to give money to private schools who basically only teach a test. And some of the stories I've heard from these voucher school programs that you get, that it basically, the voucher schools or the charter school programs, it's atrocious. It's just atrocious. It's, you know, they create this image that they're actually a good school, but all they do is you take a test in the morning. As soon as you get to school, you take a test right before you go to lunch. You take a test right after lunch, and you take a test before you go home. And that's all you do every day. But they put you in a school uniform, so it looks like you're being more studious at a cost to the parents. And yet many of these schools, especially the charter schools, at least here in Minneapolis and Minnesota, they've poorly performed. I mean, way underperformed compared to the public schools. So it's, you know, in many cases, it's a failure. In Louisiana, I believe it was, they actually had cases where the charter schools down there were so ill preparing the students for college. And so you'd have kids that were graduating these schools with like an A because all they knew how to do was take a test. And that was how you got your grade, was an A if the test was taught. And colleges started saying, I'm sorry, you don't, this, you need to go to junior college for 2 years before you're even ready to go to college. So it's, they have destroyed this, but it's not, the point is not to make education better. The point was never to make NASA better. The point was never to make the Postal Service better. The point was to get that big ball of cash away from these groups and give it to wealthy people. And that's what they have done. And Greg Abbott is a big, you know, proponent of this. And you should look at every one of these conservative states where they put this voucher program in. The vast majority of the money goes to kids who never once were in public school. Seriously, it is just, what you're doing is you're taking the public school taxpayer dollars, giving them to kids who are already going to private school, who never once spent a day in they're already going to private school. They've never spent a day in a public school, but all of a sudden they say, well, we're going to enroll our kid into a public school, and so we want the money, and so they just give them the money. It is an absolute cash grab. Well, Greg Abbott was the latest one to come up with this. He's running primarily challenges against 10 of the Texas State House Republicans who voted against the creation of a private school voucher program, helping to kill the proposal. School vouchers have long been a white whale in Texas, one of the only southern states that does not already have such a program. the overwhelmingly right-wing proponents of the vouchers who insist they will give parents mobility when the school board isn't cutting it. They blame the mostly rural Texas Republicans opposed to the program for being too close to teachers' unions. In reality, those lawmakers say they oppose the voucher plan for fear it would deplete enrollment of rural schools with little room to lose funding. And the reality is once again, in most of these southern states, the money doesn't go to poor kids. It goes to kids who are already in private school. It's a way for the taxpayers to pay for wealthy people's kids to go to public school. And every one of these bills, by the way, at some point, a Democrat tries to introduce an amendment which would say that if you make more than a certain amount of money, you cannot qualify for the vouchers, and the Republicans quickly vote it down. Why? Because it's not about getting lower-income disadvantaged kids into a better school. It's about getting the money bags, people. Giving them some more money. Give me. Money. Dance for me, Republicans. Dance. Indeed. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is backing his own slate of primary candidates against the House Republicans who voted to impeach him in a corruption charge in May. Oh, Texas. Paxton's efforts have been less money behind them, but in at least one case, they conflict with Abbott's preference. Paxton is supporting a representative, was it Travis Clardy, a rural Republican opposed to vouchers, while Abbott has endorsed a pro-voucher challenger. Well, in Texas, I mean, could tonight end up in gunfire? Maybe. Republicans are battling each other on immigration. This is down in Texas as well. So that's going on. California's 22nd congressional district, located in the state's agricultural Central Valley, has long frustrated Democrats. This cycle there, it looks like they're going to try there. It's possible neither of the two Democrats though running for the seat, former Representative Rudy Salas and State Senator Melissa Jurado, would advance to the state's top two primary system. So there's that. There is also... what's this one? Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas is one of Congress's longest serving members, first entering Congress in 1985. Over the years, she's developed a reputation for leading progressives and member of the Congressional Black Caucus for churning through staff at record levels. Now she's trying to hold on to her seat, being challenged in a majority black district surrounding Houston against a challenge from former Houston City Councilwoman Amanda Edwards. We'll take a break. Come on back. I got some news on cinema. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I wanna kiss you. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Super Tuesday. Good to have you with us. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Flo is in Minneapolis. Hello, Flo, dear. How are we?
Well, hanging in. Just got back from proudly voting for Biden Harris.
Okay. Good for you. Were there a lot of people at the voting booth?
No, it's spark.
Okay.
Sparse. But I live in a blessed district. Aside from what we have being blessed here in Minnesota, I'm in Ilhan Omar's district for Congress, and we have the president of the Senate. My state senator is Bobby Joe Champion, which you need to get back on again.
Okay.
Because he's doing just outstanding things. And Esther Ogbaje and Jeremiah Ellison is my city council member. So I'm represented, I think, better than anyone in any other district.
Well, it is one of those things, and we shouldn't throw in there, you do have two pretty spectacular senators there, too, in Smith and Klobuchar, plus Governor Walz in there. So overall, top to bottom, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, we sure are. And at least you got the own God of Dean Phillips. I don't understand that nutball. And I decided, you know what GOP really stands for, don't you?
Is it clean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead. What does GOP stand for?
Greedy, oligarch, predators.
That's actually on brand. And they probably actually have T-shirts made up with that right now. You know, no, Flo, I will say this. They moved me out of five, Minnesota five. I'm in Minnesota three. I'm in Dean Phillips' district. I don't have any idea what he's doing over there. I have no idea.
He's a nutball. I don't understand what he's thinking. But any regard for him has dropped into the negative, below zero.
Flo,
I'm looking for someone to challenge him for his seat in Congress.
Well, he's not going to be running again for sure. Flo, one last thing here. Do you want to say a quick hello to the folks in Chicago?
Oh, hello, Chicago! One of my favorite cities. Windy city. Although we've gotten kind of windy here too.
Well, that's more of the Minnesota GOP. But Flo, thank you so very much. Chicago, meet Flo. Flo, Chicago. Flo in Minneapolis, an absolutely fantastic, stellar caller who I will always give as much time to as I can anytime. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Hey, did you hear all the Republicans' sphincters tightening up a little bit earlier today? Well, that was because Taylor Swift on Tuesday encouraged her supporters to vote in the presidential primaries on Super Tuesday, including into her adopted home state of Tennessee. Today, March 5th, is the presidential primary in Tennessee and 16 other states and territories, said Swift, who has a home in Tennessee. I wanted to remind you guys to vote the people who most represent you into power. If you haven't already, make a plan to vote today. Swift wrote on an Instagram story, whether you're in Tennessee or somewhere else in the U.S., check your polling places and times at vote.org. The pop star, who is currently in Singapore on the international leg of the Eras Tour, is registered to vote in Tennessee. She voted by mail in the state's primary, a source told CNN. Swift has more than 828 million followers on Instagram. She endorsed President Joe Biden in 2020, has yet to endorse the presidential candidate this cycle. That's a mystery of the ages, isn't it? I think it's going to be. I'm going to make a call here. and as of course, as you know, that they just go crazy. They just go crazy. And you heard it. She's, you know, even though she didn't endorse Joe Biden last time, she's just telling people to go out and vote. But how dare you? Now everybody get out there and vote to stop her. What? Okay. Kyrsten Sinema. The Arizona Independent announced on Tuesday she's abandoning her hopes for re-election, will step down at the end of the year. That's actually a really, 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 really good sign for the Democrats in Arizona. The best chance the Republicans had was Sinema and the Democrat breaking the more liberal vote, and then they could sneak in there. She posted a message on Twitter. She suggested partisan politics were to blame. Well, you did this. Our democracy is weakened by government dysfunction and constant pull of extremes by both political parties. Yet, despite modernizing our infrastructure, ensuring clean water, delivering good jobs to safer communities, Americans still choose to retreat further into their partisan corners. Well, if you are for those things, I mean, and once again, you chose originally to be a Democrat, which means you imply that you somewhat agreed with this. I don't like it when, you know, you make it seem like you yourself were a Democrat. You ran as a Democrat, which means you should endorse some of the party platform. But yet now all of a sudden it's like, I'm better than everybody here. Yeah. I believe in my approach, but it's not what America wants right now. No, we don't want you right now. No. Because I choose civility, understanding, listening, working together to get stuff done, I will leave the Senate by the end of this year. Well, that technically you are succeeding because, you know, with you gone, we should get more things done. Before concluding, Sinema touted her work with Republican senators. Those solutions matter, she said. I'll make an impact on the lives of everyday Americans and how government should work. She's a first-term senator, left the Democratic Party in 2022 to become an independent. Her departure leaves a battle for the Senate between likely Pitt Republican Carrie Lake against Representative Ruben Gallego, the Democrat there. And once again, Carrie Lake was banking, and I mean banking, on her splitting the Democratic vote, because Carrie Lake is far less popular now in Arizona than she was when she ran the first time. And yeah, she's... Yeah, this is good news, folks. This is actually good news. Cinema, we'll see you in the theaters. Chicago, have a great one. We will talk to you tomorrow. Minneapolis, St. Paul, hour two. That's coming up next. Hour two of the show here on your Tuesday. Matt and Patrick and Brett is in studio. Hello, Brett. How are we?
Hey, I'm doing good. How about you?
All righty. We got a lot of things to get to, but you said apparently I have a voice message from her.
Yeah, we have a presidential candidate who wants to be on the Matt McNeil show.
Really?
That caught my attention for a second. All okay. Right, is this Joe Biden? Maybe even Donald Trump? Does he want some airtime? It'd be an interesting conversation you'd have with him, but we'd give him the time.
All right.
Vermin Supreme wants to be a guest on your show.
Vermin Supreme?
Vermin Supreme, yes.
Wow. Hamburger Helper has really taken a tumble, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Vermin Supreme, delicious, with cheesy noodles.
I just love these guys. Every cycle, they usually will send out
voicemails. Is Buckethead guy or Boothead guy running?
I don't know if he is, no.
There was the Buckethead guy in England... Mm-hmm. Who looks like that piece of art over at the Walker Sculpture Garden.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Buckethead. Where's Buckethead, man? I'd bring on Buckethead.
Would he be eligible to run for president?
I just want to do the interview because it would be, yes, Mr. McGill, I agree.
Well, maybe you need to take it one step further and host a debate between Vermin Supreme and Buckethead.
No, do not give these people ideas.
See who's got better tax policy and... infrastructure and
let's let the car crash and we'll dignify it. Okay, sure. No. Tell Vermin Supreme I'll get back to him.
All right, yeah.
Boy, and see if it comes with fries. Sorry. All right. First of all, it is we do have to mention it is AM 950 Listener Appreciation Month, continuing into March here. This week, have I got a swell prize for people out here. Every day this week, I've got a pair of tickets to go see Beautiful, the Carole King musical at the Chanhassen Dinner Theater. Now, these tickets, it's a pair of tickets. They come with complimentary dinner and show for two. You have to use them in the month of March. And the shows are running Tuesday through Sunday over at the Chanhassen Dinner Theater. If you haven't been out there, it's fantastic. I ran into Nancy Nelson out there the last time I was out there. And Don Shelby.
Wow.
I went to both of them, man. It was cool. It was just delightful. But, I mean, you know, Nance and Don aside, you still get to go see a show and dinner. And so I got a pair of tickets to give away at some point today. We'll tell you when to call in to possibly win that. Part of, once again, Listener Appreciation Month here at AM 950. I also want to just take a quick moment because I'm going to come back to this. Did you see the protest for the people that want to keep the old state flag?
Yeah, I heard they almost had to bring in like the National Guard to get the crowd under control. It was just a massive protest, wasn't it?
Two dozen donuts would have been too many.
So they didn't need that much help.
It was. I think their term is sparse crowd. They're rambling. There's a question of how many of them were actually there for the protest and were just people that were caught up walking past the group, but. Yeah, it's not a lot.
So you can't even say there were tens of people there. There wasn't even that many.
I don't think it was tens of people. There was 10 plus people. But considering people have said half the people there were media, which I'll get back to that a little bit later in the show too. Yeah, that's not a good turnout, man. That is what I think the technical term is, bad turnout. I'm no whiz here, but...
How long until we get the Republican defender saying, well, it's because it was a Tuesday morning. There were hundreds of thousands of people who wanted to attend, but they have jobs, unlike you Democrats.
I've already had three people bring that up on my social media, all on Twitter. I've had all three of them do this, and here's my response. Yes, 17 people in a city of 3.7 million. Yeah, because everyone else was working. Okay, enough. Just stop. You're trying. Stop trying to make fetch happen. All right, stop doing that. I'll get back to it. It's Super Tuesday. I should mention mnvotes.org. Mnvotes.org. That's the Secretary of State's site. Gives you your polling location. Will give you a look at your ballot. My ballot was pretty simplistic. It was just the President of the United States. You get to choose your party. So apparently, I could have chosen Republican and wrote in Matt McNeil. That would have been great. I should have done that and watched it flame on Johnny Storm. You know, it's like, no, that's not allowed.
Who is this Matt McNeil? Maybe they
know who I am. I've made friends. I picked up the Democratic ballot. I looked at a lot of people like, who's running? Hey, Moonbeam. Saw Moonbeam there. Williamson. Oh,
I was taking that literally. We have another person like the other guy.
No, Moonbeam is Marianne Williamson. Yeah, yeah. That's Moonbeam. She was on there. So is Dean. Over under, how much do you think Dean Phillips gets today?
In Minnesota, under 10 probably.
I don't think he's going to get 10.
That might be up.
I think non-committed is going to beat him by a mile.
I have to say this too. When I was, I forgot he was running this morning, and I just wanted to check and see, is his campaign still active? And that was an honest question I had to see. Well, yeah, that's right. We're in Minnesota. Let's see how he does.
If your political campaign is gotten to the point of you're checking the hours of a Chipotle, you know, it's like, are they open? Are they serving burritos now? Oh, and Dean Phillips is there. I don't think it's going too well. So it is polls, I think, 8 o'clock here. Don't they go until 8 o'clock in Minnesota? I believe they do. Polls go until 8 o'clock. You can get I got my sticker. I'm a happy little boy. You can go get your sticker, too, because it's what all the cool kids do. That is going on today. Final thing, though, I have to tell you. I got a little story for you here. Matt Leninder makes his living fixing up flipped houses. Over 5 years of bringing a new life to properties left in shambles, he thought he'd seen it all. That is until he got the call Friday from a house cleaner who had just entered a foreclosed home in Coon Rapids. He says the cleaner told him there were a number of cats who had been left behind when the owners vacated and didn't know what to do. He dropped what he was doing, drove open, opened the door. I was bewildered, overwhelmed by the smell. I can only imagine. And that ain't going away quickly. It was pretty shocking. Overwhelmed is understandable when you see the pictures of the video of the handyman remodeler and it has many cats as that were there. The deplorable, dozens of cats were living in deplorable conditions with no food, water, or usable litter boxes. Well, technically for a cat, anywhere is a litter box, but some had open sores. Others appeared to be missing eyes. At least half of the dozen were already dead. Well, I mean, if they didn't have food, you know what was going on there, right? Not sure where to start addressing the situation. He called police and then left a post on his Facebook account appealing for help. He soon heard from a handful of rescue organizations with big-hearted individuals who stepped up to gather the cooperative cats, trap the ones that weren't, and take them to a safe, clean place for food and medical care. As of Monday, he says nearly 80 cats had been rescued from the property. How do we not be able to go back and get these people?
80. And those 80. Are the ones that are, unfortunately, to put it this way, grimly, alive, because, as they said, several of them had died. There had been well over 100 cats in that place.
Coon Rapids Animal Control took 5 or 6 of the animals to a facility for urgent medical care. When the others were being housed by rescue organizations and individuals with experience in animal care, they'll be shuttled in over the next few weeks for vaccinations and be spayed and neutered. Also reached out a few friends for help, including real estate agent Buddy Becker, former Vikings quarterback Tommy Kramer. They are both personally making contributions to try to raise money for the vet care, an expensive proposition considering the number of animals that need to be helped. How do we not go back and find the original, the past owners and saying, what do you do here? What are you doing here? Why did you leave all these animals there?
Yeah, that seems
that's
like
got to be a crime.
A cut and dry case of animal cruelty to leave 100 cats plus in a house with no food, no water, and just saying, I'm out the door.
I can't imagine.
Good luck, yeah.
I can't even imagine. Well, if there isn't a law, hey, DFL, I got one for you. How about if you do this, that you go to jail at least for 2 years, you know? Hey, at least we'll give you food and water and a place to go to the bathroom. How about that? We'll treat you better than you treated the catch, you jackasses. So how about we do it like that? 952-946-6205. Patrick Cooligan, what you were gone, I had the privilege of chatting with Patrick Cooligan and the guys over there, Minnesota Reform, when you were on your vacation before. You are back now. You get a chat with him today.
Indeed, we do. And Patrick had a number of stories to cover today, including his column talking about this race in District 61A for the state legislature here in Minnesota.
It's
in Minneapolis.
It's in Minneapolis, okay.
It's in Minneapolis, and one of the candidates running ended up getting harassed on Twitter by Nazis, literal Nazis. And it wasn't even necessarily her that it was the target. What they were doing was trying to say, we're supporters of this other guy we really don't like, to attack her, saying, look how bad he is. If that kind of makes – it's a really ugly story that we're going to be getting into. Patrick has all of it. We are also going to be talking about some labor strikes that are happening around here in the Twin Cities as well, so lots to get to today.
All right, Patrick Cooligan from the Minnesota Reformer right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And on this Tuesday, we are joined by the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. That's Patrick Cooligan. Make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com for the latest in Minnesota news and politics, as we are going to be chatting about some of the stories that they have been working on, including how Nazis, literal Nazis, took interest in a race in District 61A in South Minneapolis for the state legislature. We'll also be talking about a number of strikes that are happening around the Twin Cities that are part of a larger national effort. Plus, we'll be talking about some high-speed pursuits and data that shows that, well, they might be more dangerous than you think, as well as Super Tuesday. So lots to get to today. Patrick, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So I got to start off with this, how Nazis apparently took an interest in this race in District 61A, a state house seat in South Minneapolis. And it has to do with one of the DFL candidates, Katie Jones, who originally is from rural Indiana, and she has an environmental background before moving to Minneapolis. And she decided to run for the state legislature in District 61A after serving on the staff of former Representative Frank Hormstein, who will be stepping down from that seat. Somehow, Nazis took interest in this race on social media, even though Katie really had nothing to do with the idea of how they became interested. So tell us exactly, Patrick, more about who Katie is and how these extremist Nazis took an interest in this race.
Yeah, so the longtime legislator from that district, Representative Frank Hornstein, announced he was retiring and kind of set off a bit of a frenzy to get in the race. Katie is a fairly well-known policy professional in the district. She's worked with Hornstein on some issues. So she announced that she was going to run. And there's another guy in the district. His name is Will Stansel. He's well-known to folks on Twitter because he's become a nationally well-known online pugilist against the far right, although in some cases also the far left. He's developed a significant following. His day job is that he's a research fellow at the university where he studies the segregation of schools and housing, and he's been pretty influential in that sphere as well. But he's better known, at least in the online political world, for his Twitter presence. A few weeks ago, maybe it's a month or two ago now, he got into a Twitter conflict with the far right over... I guess what we'd call race, quote unquote, science. And the reason is that there was a lot of anti-diversity, equity, inclusion activism on the right, and it had reached to, I know this is a long story, convoluted story, but you had these folks on the right saying that that airlines with DEI programs were endangering the safety of the passengers. Of course, it's ridiculous. Airlines, commercial air travel has never been safer. And this is just flat out racism. And so Stansel starts fighting this, and this is kind of like somewhat mainstream. I mean, it's funny what's now considered mainstream right wing used to be just completely beyond the pale, but he's sort of fighting with these people. And then the race science people show up to fight him. And then the Nazis come and full on, you know, full anti-Semitism, all the iconography, the whole thing. And they're fighting with him. Now, once he decides he's going to run for this legislative seat, they do a, you know, kind of a meme campaign, we would call it. It's the idea here is they're going to attack his opponent and try to build him up to make him look like to associate him with Nazis. I mean, it's obviously ridiculous. A lot of it's kind of in it's you know they, for the lulls they say it's for it's kind of just basically a joke, but it's Nazism. And so they start attacking Katie, I mean, viciously. They dox her. She's threatened with violence. They have images of her with tape over her mouth. I mean, it's just horrible stuff. And then Stansel sees what's happening. He starts blocking a lot of these people. And so they kind of get bored. Unfortunately, they apparently moved on to another one of the, candidates. Her name is Isabel Rolfs. And they start, harassing her. She's over her base. It's gender based, sexual orientation based, and racially based, attacks on her. Isabel's, the campaign manager told me they had to spend actually campaign funds on help with security at some live campaign events, and so it really shows how online extremism can jump into the real world. And at this point, you know, it's for the people on the receiving end of this harassment, it's horrible, but it is online. But the problem is, as we've seen so many times in the last few years with this far-right extremism, it can jump from online into real life and into actual violence. And I think that's the great concern here. The other part of this story that I think is important to note that it's so poignant almost is that Kornstein himself, who's not online really to speak of, and so it's he's been spared this, but he's the son of Holocaust survivors. He's probably one of the great Jewish peace and justice advocates of our time here in Minnesota. And it's just absolutely tragic to see the race for his successor get caught up into this horrible situation. So it the whole situation has caught my eye, and I thought it was important to kind of show people what can happen when this online extremism, which Twitter under Elon Musk's ownership, they've taken no measures at all to moderate. They're not trying to do anything about it, and so you get this situation where people are being harassed, and then there's the threat of it moving into real life.
We'll read more about that column talking about this race in 61A and how these right wing Nazis became involved in it over at MinnesotaReformer.com. MinnesotaReformer.com is where you can find that column. I want to move on now to another article you guys have been working on, and this one was just released this morning and by Christopher Ingram, talking about how dozens of Minnesotans have been killed in high-speed police chases since 2017. And as I was reading through, I didn't really know that there really was not a whole lot of data that showed how many people who are largely innocent bystanders are killed in these high-speed police chases. But as the data shows, not just in Minnesota, but around the country, these really are very dangerous. And more often than not, it usually is innocent bystanders that end up getting injured or possibly even killed when we have these high-speed police pursuits that oftentimes aren't even for violent offenses.
Exactly. And those incidents in Minnesota between 2017 and 2022, you had of the 54 incidents, deaths, 9 of them were just bystanders, 10 were passengers. And so, you know, those people are dead for no particularly good reason. The drivers were killed 19 times, and then there's some category called unknown 16. This is one of those that I think I'm glad that this is getting attention. We had an incident, we've had a number of incidents here, a high-profile one when Lanelle Frazier was killed in a case when an officer, Brian Cummings, was chasing some suspected thieves through a residential neighborhood of Minneapolis, and then the officer ran a red light and he killed Lanelle Frazier, who had no connection to the case. And I think it's important that we do a better job of collecting this data, because it reminds me of how for a long time you couldn't get data on how many police shootings there were around the country until I would say the Brown killing in 2014 set off a good journalistic genre, if you will, of folks who started to really keep track of police shootings. And I think it's the same thing here with these pursuits. And so many of these really are just ill-advised and imprudent, these chases, because very often if you will just go to the guy's house, then it's you'll be able to collect them without incident a few hours later or the next day. And we know that's pretty true, because a lot of these folks are not wanted for violent crimes. I mean, we have 15 traffic stops that went awry that led to police chases where somebody died. We have nonviolent crimes, another 15 dead. Violent crimes is only 9. So in those cases, there was a violent criminal and they went on a pursuit and 9 people died. And then there's another category again, unknown, is 15. We ought to have good data on this, and I think it ought to be hopefully educational for police departments that and they ought to really examine whether or not these pursuits are worth it. I know that's happened at a lot of departments, including Minneapolis, but this ought to be a national conversation. And good on the San Francisco Chronicle, which put together this database and a 50 state database, which Chris availed himself of to get the local data. But this needs to be a national conversation about the imprudence of many of these pursuits.
Yeah, definitely agree, because I would have thought, if I would have been asked, well, how often do you think innocent bystanders are either injured or killed in these high-speed pursuits? I say, maybe a few times, but as the data shows, that's certainly not the case. It happens much more frequency, not just in Minnesota, but around the country. Read more about what Christopher wrote over at MinnesotaReformer.com, titled "Dozens of Minnesotans Have Been Killed in High-Speed Police Chases Since 2017. I want to get to a few other pieces of news before we wrap things up today, and do want to talk about some strikes that are taking place around the Twin Cities and Minnesota that have been kind of part of a larger effort, because thousands of Twin Cities janitors and nursing home workers are set to launch strikes. This has been Max Nestorak, who's been working on this. And it is part of this larger effort, as many other unions have been winning concessions from their employers from around the state. And let's talk about what both the janitors and the nursing home workers are looking for, because at least when I look at the nursing home workers, it's pretty shocking to see that some of these nursing home workers were only getting paid $12 or $13 an hour. So certainly can't blame them for wanting higher pay, and definitely the same for many of these janitors as well that clean many of large businesses around Minnesota as well.
Yeah, the nursing home workers, there's about 1,000 of them at 12 facilities. They're starting a strike today. It's a 24-hour strike. They call it an unfair labor practices strike. They're looking for $25 an hour minimum wage. You know, this is some of the hardest work I can imagine doing, and good for them. And let's hope that the employers will see the light on this. This industry is really exists only thanks to state and federal funding for the most part. It all comes from Medicaid and Medicare, and you have these the nursing home executives making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and then turning around and not paying a living wage in many cases to these nursing home workers who have to work another job just to make ends meet. Then you've got 4,000 janitors who clean high rises, and they're also on strike across 100 buildings. Well, actually, they started on Monday. They're doing a 3-day strike, and airport janitors are joining today. This is all part of a coordinated effort on the part of the labor movement here in Minnesota. You've got public school teachers in St. Paul who are set to strike beginning Monday. I know they continue talks there, Minneapolis teachers. This is not a coincidence. The labor movement had all these contracts. And at the same time, that was coordinated. They wanted to have this big show of force that I think you know might remind your listeners of something that's a little bit more almost like European. With numbers comes power, and so that's what they're after. And they've also seen the big raises at places like UPS and the big three automakers in the last year. And obviously there was that inflation spike that we all endured for a couple, 3 years there, and they're trying to catch up. And so they're organized and marching.
You can read more about that at MinnesotaReformer.com, including, I think, some interesting information about how some legislation passed by the legislature has impacted the pay for nursing home workers and still some disputes between management and the union. Again, find that over at MinnesotaReformer.com. And finally, before we wrap things up, Patrick, want to get your thoughts on Super Tuesday, which, of course, takes place tonight, including primary voting here in Minnesota. I want to get your thoughts on what could be happening in both the Democratic and Republican sides, because at least on the Democratic side, there has been a push to at least launch some opposition to Joe Biden, or at least vote uncommitted along those lines on the Democratic side. Meanwhile, on the Republican side, certainly Donald Trump is the favorite, although I will point out Minnesota back in 2016 was the only state to go for Marco Rubio, so we do sometimes do some unusual things here in the state. So what are your thoughts on Super Tuesday for this evening?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's possible that Nikki Haley will have a decent outcome here. I don't think anybody thinks she'll win, but there is a lot of, let's call them Tim Pawlenty Republicans here, you know, who were never quite... They were never quite into Donald Trump. As you mentioned, he came in third in the caucus. And now a lot of them may have already just left the party and they've become soft Democrats. But I still think there's a lot of kind of pro-business, mainstream Republicans who will back Haley. And I think that's why she was here last week, because they see this as a state where they have some potential. On the other side, you mentioned the uncommitted launch. It seems like it was a little bit late in the game. The effort to get people to mark uncommitted in Michigan started much earlier, and seemed like it had a little bit more momentum to it. But we'll see how it goes here. Democrats who are trying to send a message to Joe Biden that he needs to be a little bit less deferential to Israel and the Netanyahu government. One of the problems with that is that the polling really favors American support for Israel. So if he were to kind of abandon Israel, that would be politically dangerous as well. So. That's kind of a tough spot for folks who are looking to influence American foreign policy, I think. So it looks like the outcome is pretty much inevitable here. We're going to have a rerun of 2020, and it's just a matter of you know, which candidate will get through this primary season in good shape for the general election.
We have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Again, that's MinnesotaReformer.com. As always, thanks for coming on the show today. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I want to take some time to go over this absolute disaster of a rally that the Republicans had today for the old state flag. Now, I want to make sure we understand that the Republicans, now, we remodeled the state flag. The state flag needed to be remodeled. There was racist imagery on it. The imagery of a white farmer running a Native American off the land was not a good image. And I can understand. It's like, well, it was just a Native American on a horse and the guy farming. What's the big deal? It's clear kind of what the implication was there. Plus the fact that it was just this clunky thing. And no one was inspired by that old flag. And don't get me wrong. Hey, I love the fact that the Minnesota First went out and fought in the Civil War and did all these great things and, you know, helped, helped beat the Confederates back, which was a good thing. But the reality is that it definitely needs to be updated. That being said, the Republicans now, and I should be reminded too, the entire thing, we had Anita Gall on here numerous times. I think that Governor Walz put together a pretty exceptional group of people to weigh and consider the flag proposals, all the different entries that there were made. They whittled them down. And sure, of the final ones, I wanted a different one to win, but I'm not upset about the one that did win. And it was voted on by not only, liberals and Democrats, but also a lot of conservatives were on that committee too. Steve Drazkowski, and like I said, he is one of the most conservative guys in the state. He was part of that, committee that produced this new flag. And Jeremy Munson, not exactly the most liberal guy out there, no longer in politics, but Jeremy Munson was like, okay, guys, this is, stop being upset about this. But the right could not help themselves. They went out there and they started saying, nobody wants this new flag. And of course, there were the racism and bigotry by implying it was similar to the Somali flag or represented some, African-Americans and Africans from, in the metro area. So, there was just this ugliness that was there. And you could not get away from it. Pardon me. I just sneezed. There we go. I'm okay. I'm all right. Go team, go. Hey. So you have this whole thing out there. And if you paid attention, it was so, so outraged, so crazed, so, oh my God, this is horrible, that the Republicans themselves actually had come up with It was a web page that they had made for this. The Minnesota GOP Save the Flag, which basically is kind of trying to rally around this issue. And I said earlier, I think maybe a month ago, I said, you guys want to turn this into your major issue? Good luck with that. Because I don't think people really care. Well, they were going to show us. They were going to show everybody the outrage over changing the state flag. And so they had a rally in St. Paul today. And courtesy of Peter Callahan, he took a picture of this rally from the Capitol itself looking out on the mall. And I think there's like 27 people there total. Now, before anyone started feeling good about 27 people, which once again looks like more of a gradual mingling than anything else, multiple people have said to me the majority of people there were media, that there was more media there than protesters, which is hilarious and actually something we have to talk about, because I'll come back to that in a second. So of the 20, maybe 30 people who are there, and by the way, someone also commented that was there at the time, that there are people in this photo
who weren't actually there protesting. They just were walking through the group. And so this was a measly, minuscule, miserable turnout for the Republicans on what they are hoping is a signature issue for them this election cycle. Just hilarious. As a matter of fact, so hilarious that for a good chunk of the day, the website, the Save Our Flag website, was down. It's back up now. It is back up and running now, but it was down for a good chunk of the day, which, yeah. And I can't imagine you've gotten too many people are buying that. I think at this point it's over. I think you might as well just give up on this issue, because the imagery of this is so atrocious. Is so atrocious. You know, no one can paint this as, oh, it's misunderstood. I've had insane amounts of Republicans insist to me, well, Matt, you're missing the point that everybody in the Twin Cities who supports the flag is working. They're not there because they're working. Okay, you're in a city of 3.7 million people. There are probably, within walking distance of the Capitol, at noon today, which is lunch hour, 50,000 or so people who either live or work within the state capitol, near the state capitol grounds, who could easily just hop over here and protest. And you got, what, 17 people? That's it? In a city of 3.7 million? Heck, you didn't even have any real politicians show up for this thing. You're gonna triple this number if you just made all the Republicans show up. And they didn't even want to be out there for this because it's stupid. And no, this wasn't about the workday. No one cares about this. This image is just priceless. This image is just priceless. No one cares about this. And as a matter of fact, I want to give credit to one poster who basically, you know, his argument was, this is when people who are internet trolls and have the bravado online run into reality. Which, this is a bad sign for the Republicans. And let me explain. So let's go back to that little nugget about over half the people, or at least half the people there, were news media. Okay? That means they were invited out. Now, it's not that difficult for them to cover it. I mean, they're in the Capitol for the most part anyway during the day covering this. But they invited the news media out. Who did that? The Republican Party did. The Republican Party probably put out a news release and say, we're going to have this massive rally that's going to protest this new woke flag. And you need to be there because it's going to be a bellwether moment in Minnesota politics. We're going to demand the old flag be put in there. And they're going to be so terrified of the crowd that they'll have no other choice but to go back to the old flag. Clearly, the GOP brought people out here, which is a huge red flag. Because even I could have, if I was someone trying to put this together, even if I was doing that, the first thing I would say is, well, how much of this is really people outraged? And how much of this is internet trolls? Because the reality is, it was clear to me that whether it's the name of the guy, and it's all on Twitter, the name of the guy is Phil with 19 numbers next to it, or it's some person who's got two or three followers. It's all internet trolls. There is no reality to that. It was all internet trolls. And you should have been smart enough to realize that it was. 10 years ago, the Republican Party of Minnesota would have never been stupid enough to try to have this rally. But here we are 10 years later, because you want to see how much the idea, the influence of the internet troll has infiltrated the Republican Party. It's this. It's that they bought the trolls as legitimate people. They went out there. We're going to have this rally, invite all the media, and you look like a freaking laughingstock. Because you look like a laughingstock. A flag that 90% of your supporters, so I guess what, 16 of them, 16 of them, could never even have identified if it was put in front of them beforehand, all of a sudden now are outraged to the point of, this is the biggest issue of the day. And no one cares. No one cares. It is the dumbest thing, I got to tell you. This is such an unforced error. This is such an unforced error. And once again, if anything tells you how much that right wing, I'm only in politics to appeal to the internet trolls, has taken over the Republican Party as a whole, is that 10 years ago, they would have never been this dumb to have this rally. And yet they now are convinced that this is the biggest issue of our day. Run with it. Oh, I'm terrified. Oh, no, not the flag issue. Oh, no, that's going to really hurt us here. Mary is in Hopkins. She wanted to comment on the flag. Welcome on in, Mary.
Hey, Matt. Yeah, I just wanted to say that for sure over the last, you know, 5-6 years, the only people I've seen really defiling the flag, the American flag, and I guess now Minnesota, are Republicans by wearing it on their butts, like in shorts form, wearing it on their hats. On January 6th, didn't one of them have a sharpened flagpole that they were using as a weapon? Do you remember Kid Rock when he cut a hole in the flag and put it over him like a poncho? So, you know, spare me that they care about the Minnesota flag.
Well, they don't. They don't. It's clearly, and Mary, your point is absolutely spot on. They don't care. This is not an issue for them. This is just they're trying desperately to find something that is going to resonate with voters, and they're gambling on this, and it's a swing and a miss.
Well, didn't Trump just hug the flag
gropes the flag all the time. And thanks, Mary. I appreciate the phone call. Trump puts his image on the flag. That also is a violation of flag code. No, they don't care about the flag. They don't care. This is just a manufactured thing. But once again, this just shows you it's the internet trolls then walk smack into the world of reality. And all of a sudden, all these guys that are just internet trolls, who don't either even really exist or are a bunch of freaking cowards that sit in their mom's basement and act like they're tough guys, when it comes to actually going out and doing anything, guess what? They don't even want to do anything. 952-946-6205. Let's give away a pair of tickets, shall we? Beautiful. The Carole King musical is coming to the Chanhassen Dinner Theater. I'm going to go over and see it on Friday night. I'm looking forward to that. I've got a pair of tickets, include a complimentary dinner and show tickets for two for the month of March. Let's do caller number 5, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Caller 5, you win a pair of tickets to go see the Carole King musical. Beautiful. Good luck. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Patrick's talking to our winner here. We'll find out the name of them in just a moment. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Congratulations. I got a pair of tickets to give away every day this week, so listen for your chance to win tomorrow. And by the way, quick little programming note tomorrow. No Stein tomorrow. He's got some things he's got to do, but guess what? Cliff Schechter's in town. So we'll have Cliff on with us. Well, not in town, but he'll be on with me coming up here tomorrow during the 3 o'clock hour. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. MinnPost had a story in Minnesota's latest economic news. 5 pieces of good news that they explain. And it is actually good to take some time here to look at this, because once again, it's important we vote. And we have to understand the Democrats have delivered. The economy is doing well. What are the things that Republicans are upset about? The flag, police officers not being able to body slam a teenager, stuff like that. The day-to-day stuff, schools, they're happy with. Health and Human Services, getting better. Senior care, getting better. You know, it's the quality of life in Minnesota, getting better. Why? Because the Democrats have delivered. An interim report released January said the state's macroeconomic vendor, S&P Global, reported improved conditions versus what had been reported just 2 months earlier. At that time, the upgraded predictions for gross domestic product increased for 2023 and 2024. Last week, just a month later, it enhanced its looks for all five fiscal years up to 2027. So all of them are looking better for the state's GDP. And so that's really good. That's really good when you look at something like that. Unemployment is still really, really low, which is good. Once again, it's the, 2.9%. The national average is 3.7%, which is also still incredibly low. We have some of the lowest unemployment rates in the last 30 years right now, which is just amazing. Labor force participation is a measure of number of people who could work holding jobs. Minnesota's 68.1% is the fifth highest in the U.S., exceeds the overall national rate of 62.5%. Corporate profits are way up, higher than expected. Collections from the corporate franchise tax drove the bulk of the increased revenue between November and February. Of the $1.34 billion increase in projected revenue increases shown in the forecast, more than half came from the corporate tax, even though it's only the third largest driver of revenue after the individual income tax and the sales tax. So corporate profits are up, henceforth corporate tax rates are, we're getting a little more money there. So things are going well. An equal tide raises all boats. So good news there. The latest forecasts are predicting faster declines in interest rates as the economy sees a more rapid reduction in inflation. Interest rates are the Federal Reserve's most potent tool to bring down inflation. So this is good. The things are starting to come down there. It's expected to fall once again this year and next year, as far as inflation goes, so that's good. And once again, the soft landing issue, that's a term economists use for the success of the Fed's battle against inflation. Increasing interest rate triggers recession along with negative economic growth. In the Fed, if the Fed can increase the rates in a way that slows the economy without recession and put it going into recession, that's called a soft landing, which they kind of have pulled off. Patrick, who is the name of our winner of those tickets to the Carole King Musical?
Congratulations, Jim, in St. Louis Park. You're going to see the Carole King Musical, and he said his wife is extremely excited, a huge Carole King fan.
Oh, you enjoy that. Congratulations on that. I got a pair of tickets to give away every day this week, so listen for your chance to win tomorrow, Thursday, and on Friday. 952-946-6205. One final thing. It is primary day. And once again, you want to vote non-committed. That's fine. That's your choice. I would say the last thing you want to do is play games when the only two options on the table are Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Because once again, it's not necessarily who you're voting for. It's who you're preventing from getting into the White House. And sure, you can go make your statement, but if you deteriorate support for him and we end up with Trump, did you really succeed? Especially when things get a lot worse for whatever pet issue you have. Because trust me, you agree with Joe Biden probably 80, 90% of the time. You don't agree with Donald Trump. Just keep that in mind. MNVotes.org, MNVotes.org. Native Roots Radio is up next. Have a good one. Till tomorrow. See ya.